Hello and welcome to the Newism podcast, where we talk to social entrepreneurs and big thinkers to discover how they would shape a new, more sustainable and inclusive global system where humans live within the means of the planet and all forms of life can thrive. This week, we are talking to Jeru Bilimoria, an incredibly successful serial social entrepreneur. Her work has largely focused on children, aiming to ensure they have what they need, safety, education, financial security, to thrive. Her award-winning NGOs include Child and Youth Finance International, Aflatoon International, Childline India, and Child Helpline International. She, like Mel, is an Ashoka and a Schwab Fellow, and she is currently at the heart of the Catalyst 2030 initiative, a collaborative of social entrepreneurs, governments, and other organizations with a goal of accelerating progress towards the SDGs by radically transforming social innovation systems and driving systems change interventions. Old friends Jeru and Mel's conversation centers around the power of collaboration to drive deeper and faster change, the principle on which Catalyst 2030 is based. They also discuss the importance of admitting failure and of the seemingly counterintuitive notion of shutting down an organization when it has achieved success. This is a great opportunity to listen to two leading social entrepreneurs discuss how to drive lasting change. The current series of the Newism podcast was recorded during lockdown, so we were at the mercy of technology and Wi-Fi connections. Please bear with us if the sound quality isn't up to scratch. We promise the content of the conversations is worth it.
Welcome to the latest Newism podcast. Very honored today to be speaking to Jeru Bilimoria, originally from India, now based in Amsterdam, an outstanding international social entrepreneur, who is one of the founders and leading lights of a new initiative called Catalyst 2030, which just started at the beginning of this year. So Jeru, tell us about that. What's your thinking behind this new initiative and what's it all about?
Catalyst 2030 is a practitioner-led movement. I say we have close to 100 plus co-founders to this movement. And the main objective of Catalyst 2030 is to help achieve the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. Because as things stand, they will be achieved by 2094. And with COVID, even later probably. So all of our social entrepreneurs, we are coming together with other partners in the field and ecosystem people to try to make sure we can achieve the SDGs.
And how's it been so far? I mean, a lot of people have joined. I know online sessions with different people, a lot of energy around it. What's the next stage? How's it going?
It's going, in one word, amazing. It's going so fast, it's almost difficult to keep up because the energy is so positive and everybody is contributing, and I think that's what makes it so amazing. What's happening? Well, a lot of things. For one, we've developed a very concrete strategy and roadmap. I think that's the most important. Secondly, we have started working on how can impact look differently in the sector, how the funding systems needs to change. So we have already got a report out on embracing complexity, which was done with McKinsey, Ashoka, Skoll, Echoing Green, Schwab, and Co-Impact. So we've already done that, and there have been a lot of dialogues with funders to take it forward. Then we are looking at impact, we are looking at working with the countries, and the whole movement has come together on a campaign catalyzing change for COVID, and that is the start. It showcases what entrepreneurs are doing for COVID, but it is now also looking at what are the key issues which have come because of COVID, and we are coming together to create a policy statement on what can be done post-COVID and how social entrepreneurs can help. And I think that's most important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what you're talking about is harnessing the energy of social entrepreneurs who I suppose have been working away at the cliff face for years, sometimes with support, sometimes not. But you're talking about pulling all these this energy together, connecting with people in other sectors, and basically you're talking about system change at the end of the day, isn't it? Aren't we looking for system change so that the SDGs can be achieved? Because without the system change, we're not going to achieve that. Is that right?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And together we can achieve much more. And I think all the entrepreneurs realize this. That's why we are coming together and really working on it.
And within Catalyst, you have a number of different themes running. Is that right? Different groups of people are on themes connected with the SDGs. Is that the way this is working?
Yes. So we not only do we have working groups on basic operational and other things, but we also have themes like education, livelihoods, health, inclusion, all of those things. So all of that is also happening. Yes.
That's great. That's great. When the newism, we're talking about, you know, the basis of what the world would look like with a new economic system, a completely new economic system. And one of the areas that we look at is what's the role of government in our lives, and it's changing, and people's view of politicians is very low. People's trust of governments is very low. Do you think, in some ways, what you're talking about through this initiative, that the social entrepreneurs are emerging as new leaders? In a different way from politicians that people can trust, and these are the people who are going to get things done?
I think so. And I think we are also talking about social entrepreneurs collaborating with each other and with other sectors to make things happen. So I think what we are trying to do as social entrepreneurs and through the movement is we are there and we make things happen. So I think that's pretty much the slogan or the byword, if I have to say it. We make things happen. We have come together to make that happen. And so that's the new change. And we hope the next decade we will be able to show that and show why people should work with social entrepreneurs and innovators.
So government, therefore, going forward with this emerging sector, and you called it a movement, we'd have some sort of relationship, but wouldn't be providing the lead. So if we looked at, say, the issue of tackling poverty, for example, which in some ways, since the end of the Second World War, has been the kind of fiefdom of governments or international government agencies like the UN or the World Bank. Are we talking about new institutions emerging as a result of this, with social entrepreneurs showing the way how to eradicate poverty by actually getting on and doing it together?
I think there should be new collaborations. So we don't need more institutions, we need more collaboration. So what would be the best way to do it is social entrepreneurs have the last mile reach, governments, UN agencies have the funding, we have the, for want of a better word, the methodology to make things happen. So if we all worked together, we could achieve the change faster. And I think that is the main thing. To me, it is collaboration. If we collaborate within the sector and across sectors, change will happen faster.
So is what you're saying, in a sense, is one of the problems at the moment is that everybody's operating in different silos and not connecting with one another. And what Catalyst 2030 is doing is kind of creating an overarching vision, if you like. Social entrepreneurs are showing practically how that vision can be achieved and collaborate with other people who are stuck in silos to just get on and do things. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, absolutely. You articulated it very well.
I'm listening to your words, though. Trying to get to a conclusion. But it's been one of my views for a long time about how everybody operates in their own silos and doesn't get out of it. And it's so frustrating at times. But tell me a little bit about the beginning of yourself. I mean, I met you kind of 20 years or so ago through Schwab.
Yes.
And at that time you were doing Childline India. So tell me, how did you get into being a social entrepreneur, and what was driving you in India at the beginning?
I think my family, simple. It was probably in my DNA. That's all I can say. My family brainwashed me. Very simple.
It's very honest of you to say so.
Yeah.
And tell me about the first organization you set up then. What happened with that? Because obviously what you've achieved over that time has been hugely impactful and impressive.
The first organization as a physical organization or a movement? Which one?
Maybe it's a physical organization.
Okay. The first one was Unnati and it failed.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely failed. And I think that's important. People don't talk about it because it was, well, now in 1980, and I was talking about how could we use machine learning to track missing children.
Yeah.
I think the technology wasn't there. It's getting there now. So we are doing it now. But at that point, it was not there. Since then, of course, we went on to found Aflatun, Meljol and Childline. And that's when I met you with Childline. And well, Childline today is in almost every district of India. And we field around 15 million calls a year of children from abuse to child labor to mental health issues to the whole gamut of what is needed. Everything to food just now. We are actually providing food and relief in COVID. So health, everything. Then went on to start Child Helpline International. There were helplines in Europe, but not in the developing world. So sort of taking the developing world model across through Child Helpline International. That's now in, I think, 150-odd countries. Then started Aflatun and then CYFI, which we shut down because we achieved our objectives.
And so I'm very interested in all that because obviously you've been hugely successful. I mean, the impact into the lives, I mean, you've been incredibly modest like most social entrepreneurs. The impact into children's lives, not just in India but around the world, will be profound. And there'll be all sorts of stories that you won't even know, but as a result of a phone call, a child's life has possibly been saved. So it's amazingly impactful and it's a very simple model as well. Here's a free telephone line and phone up and you can get help at the other end. So a fantastic initiative. But I'm so interested in the bit about, at the beginning where you say you failed and then the bit later on where you said you shut it down because you'd achieved your objectives. Now, actually, yesterday I was on a different type of interview and I was saying one of the challenges in the UK is that there's too many charities and they're not very effective and actually need to shut down. And there's not a culture at all of charities shutting down. It's almost like once they're set up forever. They lose their objectivity. And then the other side of that is that people won't admit when things are failing. So very interested in your kind of experience of that being clear about the failure and the reasons for shutting down.
Okay, so with Child and Youth Finance International, it was set up as a systems change organization and it was an offshoot of Aflatun. And we had been very clear that we should shut down in 5 years, maximum 7 years. And of course, when we started, everyone said, ha ha, you're never going to do it. You know, and also we had created a set of objectives and we said that if these are met, we will shut down. And we had, in a sense, we outlined our shutdown plan as we started the organization. So, for example, we knew that if we had to, success for us was for financial education, if OECD took it on, if it became part of PISA, you know, PISA testing. Yeah. And if they were willing to look at the policy work with governments. So that for us was one major success. And we had a flagship program, which therefore we co-created with them. We created the education curriculum with them. So when the time came to shut down, OECD took on Global Money Week, which was the flagship program. The curriculum that had been created was already linked and co-created with UNICEF and OECD. So it already got into the system because there was ownership. Similarly, our youth entrepreneurship work, we did a lot of it with ITC. And therefore, we were able to hand it over to ITC, where they have continued the work, and we were able to help them to look at the program aspect and the policy aspect. And with both of these, we also did what we call asset transfer, which is not only did we transfer the domain name, the everything that went with the program, we also transferred staff. So the knowledge also went with them. We did the same for the Alliance for Financial Inclusion, where we transferred the knowledge base for financial inclusion. And we had a program which had been created to work with School Bank, which we transferred back to Aflatun because it had been co-created more as a model. And in addition, we said we would shut down when we reached a tipping point of 75 countries who had done policy change and were in different aspects of policy change. So that work also, we handed it all over to OECD so they could continue working with it. So essentially, my thinking is, if you know that you're a systems change organization, you set your objectives. When you realize you're reaching the tipping point, you need to start a transition process and build it into your gene pool right from the beginning. And it took time. It took time to convince the board, because when you have governors on your boards, they're like, you're doing great. You're at the peak of doing amazing work. Why do you want to shut down when your brands are so global, you're reaching so many million children, etc., etc.? But we were very, very clear that these were objectives and you have to stay true to mission. So that's what we did.
It's a really, really interesting story, because I think it's a fantastically positive outcome, but it's quite unusual in the sector. The normal situation in the sector would be that if you get something successful, as you said, the successful brands operating globally, then you're on a great trajectory, you're growing, you should keep growing, and actually, why shut down? Now, to hear your story, I think, is very, very important, because it is about, at the end of the day, with Catalyst 2030 as well, you're talking about system change. So if I look at the organizations I'm involved in, for example, around homelessness, The mantra has to be, we're in the game to end homelessness, so to put ourselves out of business.
Exactly.
We are not in the game of managing homelessness, which is actually, it might be very laudable and good and good people involved, but it actually isn't changing anything. You're just on a kind of a wheel that keeps turning all the time, and you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah. I think the important thing in system change is being very clear about what is the system you want to change, how you want to change it, and what are the broad brushstrokes of what success or change is about. You know, because I think once that is very clear, it's very easy. It's easier to get what you want. So I think it's just knowing what you have to do and going for it.
But we need to do that. I think there needs to be a culture change, that the story you're telling needs to be heard more within the sector. There's very few organizations I've heard of, or I've heard of some, right enough, but very few who talk about that actually, you know, we have an exit strategy. So in the business community, you'll hear they will have exit plans, in a new business, in the startup phase, people will talk about that, whatever that plan is going to be. But within our sector, the social enterprise sector, charity sector even, it's very, very unusual.
Yeah, I agree.
I think in terms of what you're describing, though, both in terms of exit, but also, you know, your collaboration in terms of system change is a way forward if we want to create genuine change going forward. Yes. So do you find that, I mean, obviously I'm talking to you and I'm fairly convinced. Do you find that you get pushback from other organizations on this when you talk to them, or do people kind of say, you know, you're right, we should be looking at it this way?
I'd say mixed reactions. And I have to say that when I was talking about this, say, 15 years back or 20 years back, everyone just rolled their eyes and said I was talking rubbish. So if I look at the trajectory now, I think it is changing. I think shutting down organizations and handing over assets or handing over what's needed, I think that is still something which needs to grow in the sector. But I think it will come. I remember when I was handing over Childline India or Child Helpline International, and I had said that from the beginning, people had said, you don't need to do it, also because I was relatively young. And I said, no, succession planning has to be woven in right from the beginning. And that had not happened. But now I hear more and more people talking about it, doing it. So I believe change is happening. It's just a matter of time.
And would that, presumably that type of change within the sector, will actually aid collaboration? Because if you go in with that attitude, then, you know, when you're talking about your relationship with OECD, for example, then with that history, if you like, organizations are much more open to the possibility of kind of working with you on a change.
I don't think it would ever have happened if we hadn't from day one considered OECD or ITC our partners. We had MOUs with them. So even for them to take on things, it was just easy because there was already, they had been part of co-creating CYFI. So they felt an ownership. They felt an ownership to the products, and that's what they took on. So that's what's really important.
And you're obviously, as a social entrepreneur, you're an optimist. Are we going to get there in 2030, do you think?
I hope.
It's not what I asked you.
We all hope.
Honestly, maybe this is me really being the optimist. I think something big has to shift. And maybe what's happened with COVID is that call from God or nature or those whatever the forces that you need to have a shift. So I think things will become better. People realize the need for shift.
Yeah,
and so if we collaborate, and if we are very clear, I think it can happen.
So that's interesting because there's a few at the moment, because it is like a kind of, it's a major global disruption that happened. People talk about disruption, disruptors or entrepreneurs, but this is really major disruption. But the question is, will something constructive emerge out of this, or will we go backwards?
It's in our hands. It's in our hands, Mel, as young, as social entrepreneurs. In our hands.
So there's a bit of leadership emerging, say, out of things like Catalyst 2030, for sure. You can see that governments and, to some extent, some of the big businesses are actually struggling with what's the way forward here. And what I would say to them, and I was last night actually in a session with business people, was talking to them about, you know, there's an opportunity here to create major change in society at this point right now. Because if you're talking about your example, really about collaboration between businesses who are maybe struggling and the social entrepreneurs to create some new entities that have different outcomes, that are not simply measured by profit lines or by growth indicators, but they're actually measured by something else, which is sustainable.
Right, absolutely right.
And you believe that the leadership is going to emerge through the social entrepreneurs?
I think it's already emerging, and I think there's a different type of leadership which is emerging, a more collaborative leadership.
And what I suppose you get is a kind of pushback from elected politicians. I mean, is what happening here? We're moving into a new phase of democracy, where the political mechanisms are no longer relevant anymore, and you've got the new leaders emerging. But the pushback on it might be, but they're not elected. So where are they coming from? Where did they get their credence from?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think we have to just see. And I also think, maybe I differ here, I think leadership will not emerge from one sector. Leadership will emerge across sectors because people will see the need to collaborate. you know. And the social entrepreneurs have the time-tested proven solutions or approaches or models. And then if there is a collaborative mindset, then things will change more.
And it's quite possible a lot of people will say we're kind of on the cusp of this. I mean, I would encourage anybody that listens to this to listen to some of the discussions that Catalyst 2030 are having, because they are very, very constructive and inspiring in many ways. But still people are grappling around with, okay, what might we practically do? But the discussions are very inspiring, I think, don't you?
I think the discussions are inspiring, and also there are very practical, how do you say, practical steps and solutions also. So I think there's a mix of both happening, and a lot of peer learning and peer partnerships.
And it's not about, as what I was describing to somebody the other day, who said, oh, it's just a way of the social sector getting some funds, so it's a more efficient way of doing it. And I was kind of pushing back and said, it's not that at all, actually. It's actually about a social entrepreneurs being more effective in use of funds. But actually, it's about finding new ways of working that can be better in terms of impact rather than funding. The funding is there, but it's not the be-all and end-all.
I agree. Yeah. I think funding is important, but I think collaboration is more important. And I think actually, if you really have to look, large program-based funding is not what is currently needed. But catalytic funding, core funding, which encourage people to work with governments to discover new models of working, to be able to reach the last mile or the first mile, whatever way you look at it, is what is really important.
And so do we need new funding models? So, you know, at the moment that we have philanthropists, because the economic system has made some people very, very rich, and some of these people are generous and give money, but with a lot of time, the kind of strings attached with that money, do we need to change the way in which philanthropists are working in the sector, as well as social entrepreneurs working in the sector? Is that needed as well?
I think so. I think embracing complexity, the report I mentioned earlier, which we did with McKinsey, actually talks about what are the five key principles which need to change from philanthropy, and most importantly, how does the power dynamic need to change? I think currently the study said that 90 plus percent of the people have to change their proposals to meet donor requirements. And that means you're constantly struggling, you're constantly having to adjust. So instead, if we co-created the proposals with the people on based on what were the client's needs and not everybody else's, then I think we will have the real change. And I think there should be much more of co-creation, and B, there should be much more of risk-taking, in my opinion.
And do you think at the moment a lot of that the sector, the philanthropy sector, is risk-averse at the moment? Is that one of the challenges?
I think so. Everyone wants to fund more project work and less of systems work. Systems work is messy. You will take 4 steps forward, 15 steps back, 3 forward. That's what it is about. And you can't say, I fed this one child. You know, it's not as easy. So I think it's a mix of, I help this one child, but if we do systems work along with the learnings from that, then we are able to do it. So like, you know, you're able to do both things together.
Exactly. And do you think that this is, I mean, obviously what's happening at Catalyst 2030 and others, the social entrepreneurs are getting this and understanding this and are coming together, which is really adding value and strength. But are the philanthropists on that side, are they starting to understand this? Are they starting to move towards this movement?
I think it's slowly happening, and I really do believe you should probably speak to Tim Hanstead from Chandler Foundation, because Tim is really trying to shift the needle on this. He's a Catalyst member. He was a social entrepreneur. He is now working with a funder. And Tim is really trying to talk to funders and speak the language, as he says, of the doers and the donors to sort of forge a midway path. So this is something which Tim is doing, and he's trying to get all the funders to join Catalyst, but with the mindset that they are co-creating. Entrepreneurs also understanding that.
I mean, we actually had a podcast with Tim, and he was great. He was talking about that. And I think it's very, very valuable to have somebody like Tim, who was previously a social entrepreneur, now in that case, so he understands the sector, if you like, very well. And he's able to demonstrate the power of this collaboration that you're describing. It's fantastic. The opportunities here are really fantastic. Catalyst 2030 is a tiny organization in a sense, with two people at the center working, but actually a massive potential output at the end of the day. People are getting very excited about what's happening there. You're finding more people are coming to the movement, joining in?
Yes, definitely. Instead, after this, I have a call with the membership committee, and we have around 80 new applications. So, yes.
And the object is just to get as many people who want to join in to make a contribution into the movement.
I think it is people who believe in systems change and who understand what's happening and are willing to contribute. I think it's not just getting it in.
Yeah. So it's not about numbers. It's actually the body of the willing, if you like, people who are willing to commit time and energy and ideas and so on and so forth to make this happen. Exactly. I think it's so interesting that, because in the world, if you look at statistics, they'll show you, for example, that over the years, poverty has actually decreased in the world, the numbers. And it's because of what social entrepreneurs in many cases have done, good work, or governments, particularly if you look at China and India. But it's hiding the fact that there's still major problems in the system, in that the rich are getting richer, or money's going to money, poor are getting poorer, and this COVID-19 crisis will exacerbate that problem even further. So there's a fundamental problem in the system, regardless of the fact that people will talk about statistics and things are getting better. Things have got better, but the system actually is potential to make things a lot worse. So this going forward has to be based on drivers of real system change. Otherwise, all the social entrepreneurs are going to be on this kind of hamster wheel forever, I think. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. We basically have to change the inequality that is there. And I think that is a big factor. And if we can address that in some countries, I think the inequalities have got worse. So I think there has to be a new economic paradigm shift. And I do hope that COVID will help people realize that and make that happen.
The problem that we find in the discussion, why we have the newism discussions, is that particularly with the economy, is that you'll find people who'll agree with what you're saying. And then they'll talk about how they want to adjust the economic system, which is to adjust the current economic system. It doesn't change the fundamentals of the system. It only plays around on the edges of it. And what we need to do in the new paradigm of the economics is create a way in which we have to think completely differently. So we have to have blank bits of paper and start to address issues like tax, for example. What's fair? Should people be taxed? How should they be taxed? Who's collecting the tax? What's the tax being used for? And in connection with that, where does the third sector sit next to where that money is being raised? So some people will say in a new system, don't have any tax. Other people will say have lots of tax. But it's these kind of central issues, if you want to shift the economic paradigm, one has to address, I think.
But I think it's beyond taxation, being married to a tax consultant.
You'll be an expert to answer then.
No, I definitely am not an expert to answer, but I think it's beyond taxation, because if I look at in India, I come from an Indian context, and if I compare it to the Netherlands, in the Netherlands, there's much more of a structure for paying taxes and much more of an ethos for paying taxes, whereas in India, the structures are not as robust, and therefore there's a very small handful which is paying the taxes, and I'm not sure that is the right way forward either, you know.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not making a case for or against it. I'm simply saying it's just one of many areas in an economic system one has to look at, and maybe because taxes don't work in India, you don't have a tax system because it doesn't work. But what do you have is the question. And these are the kind of, for me, fundamental issues one has to look at about public sector finances, the role of business, leadership, say, around social entrepreneurs emerging, etc. What's new that creates us into a new paradigm? Because, you know, one of the key issues is around the environment and the climate. And we can't keep growing when we have a finite planet. So the whole basis of our economics currently in the world is based on growth, and it doesn't work.
I totally agree that we need to have a different economic model in terms of, or for that matter, a different model itself in terms of how we are doing things. So I totally agree to that. But at the same time, my question would be slightly different. I think there are two ways to go about it. Are we going to break down the current house and build a new house? Okay, if you are looking at it. Or are we going to say that we have to renovate the current house and make it as environment friendly, as, you know, as everything, as comfortable, as whatever. So you take the good and the new and build it together. And my approach is, I think when you've tried to build something which is totally, when you say we are going to do away with totally the old order and build something new, I don't see that. I'm being very honest with you. I don't see that as working. What I do see, so I don't think it's right to just break down a whole house and to build it. What I do think is you take some of the features, and you keep some of the features which are good in the old house, example, social entrepreneurs, huh? But you can take other features which are not so good and dismantle. So for me, a new ism has to be a ism which looks at the positives of the system and builds on the positives. And that's how I see it evolving. But that's my perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, very interesting, and obviously makes logical sense. Social entrepreneurs, I am one, so we're very driven by practical activities and outcomes and so on, and we're idealistic in a sense, but equally we see what's going on at the front door and just go on and do things. But it's interesting, because I think we have to start to define what are the good things that we want in the house, as you describe it then, and what are the bad things that we don't want in there, and how can we make this fit globally? So plenty of challenges.
Yes, definitely. And I think that's something which needs to start as soon as possible. Because currently what I feel, we have something, but we don't have the whole picture. So we need to, and I think with Catalyst, that's what we were trying to create, that what is the world that we see in 2030? With the sustainable goals, how do we see it different? What is the role that we can play? How can we get the forces together to have this new system come through? So it's sort of building on what is there, but also making quite a few major changes, both in our way of functioning and hopefully in the government and the corporate sector's way of functioning.
That's fantastic. I think we have to finish there, Juru, because we run out of time as ever. You know, we could go on speaking for hours, But just finishing on that note, which as ever talking to you is full of positive future prospects, and hearing your story about everything that you've done since you became a social entrepreneur in India and around the world, it's phenomenal. And now, you know, having a look at the potential for genuine, lasting system change in the world, you know, which it's really overdue. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And obviously, we watched what's happening. Everyone's going to watch what's happening with Catalyst 2030 very carefully. And we have to hope it's going to be successful.
I hope rather than watch, everybody joins and helps co-create. That would be true change.
That would
and
be true
a
change.
Truism. Yes.
A truism. Well, we will definitely be featuring and talking about Catalyst 2030 a lot, for sure.
Super. Thank you very much.
Churu, thank you very much. Lovely talking to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this remarkable social entrepreneur talk so practically and optimistically about how we can achieve the change that the world so urgently needs. We'll be back next week with another fascinating conversation. If you enjoy this series, we'd be really grateful if you could rate and review us on iTunes so that our conversations reach as many people as possible. Thank you.